Andrew Walker, Sat Shaw, joined right now by Sportsnet's Dan Murphy. And Elliot Friedman was not at an amusement park. He was not riding a roller coaster. Little known fact about me, I will never, the rest of my life, ever go on any sort of amusement park ride. Absolutely terrified. Are you a ride guy? Are you a roller coaster guy? Are you a thrill seeker? An adrenaline pincher?
For sure. You wouldn't go on a roller coaster?
No. Nope.
Yeah, I would. I mean, for sure I would. Went to Disneyland, I think, a couple years ago just for the day. The family was down there, so got on the roller coaster there. And, yeah, I like it. I mean, some of them now, the ones that spin you around and around and around and around, those might not agree with me, like when I was younger, but that's probably just more to do with my stomach than any sort of fear. I like that kind of stuff. But I don't want to go on some old rickety wooden one. You know, I want something that's more a little updated. So, but yeah, no, I enjoy that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it's not, you're not like, the tempting death doesn't excite you. You just like the adrenaline of it.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, rides are fun. I mean, I remember I was talking to my wife. She's like, well, we better go back to Disneyland one more time before she gets too old. I'm like, how old are you? And at the time, she was, whatever, 43. I said, do you still like going to Disneyland? She goes, yeah. I said, I think we're safe. We can probably go still in a couple of years. And, you know, the 9-year-old will like it as much as the 7-year-old.
Are you a ride guy, Sat?
See, I used to be. And then the last time I went to, I was so excited to go. And the last time I went, I had such bad back and neck pain the day afterwards. I completely regretted going. So it's like, I enjoy the thrill of it. But clearly, even at the tender age of 36, my body is breaking down more.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is too, like big lines and stuff like that and big crowds, I'm not a big fan of, but I will relay this. And I think we know who Dave Tomlinson is. We were there, not with Tomlinson, but he was there with his kids. And, literally it was like, I don't know, 9:30 in the morning. We just got to the park. I can't remember for the California Dreaming side, or I don't even know what it's called, but we're walking around and sure enough, I walk in and there's Dave Tomlinson and he's sitting on a bench with his two kids. It's 9:30. He's like, we're already having a family timeout. I was like, good start to the day with the family there, Dave. Well done.
Oh man. That's like, is that the biggest challenge, I guess, when I mean, you know, if you take kids to an amusement park, that it could go really, really well, but if it goes sideways, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, probably. And his kids are a little bit older, so I'm sure he could have just let his daughter go and do what she wanted to do at that point. But yeah, I mean, you don't want to have it go sideways, but you can just leave at that point. It's not like it's very expensive.
Yeah, well, my goodness, I was gonna say, you know what? Like I don't know. I swung and missed. Like I don't have kids right now. So like, yeah. So whatever. Like life happens at different paces for sure. But I might. I don't know, Murph. Like it might never happen for me because. Like even that little sentence that you just gave us right there gives me anxiety. Like imagine spending like $1,000 to take a bunch of kids to an amusement park and then it's like hot and miserable and you're tired and like, oh my, like nothing about that sounds wonderful at all.
No. Then you'd just be Chevy Chase from Vacation. You'd be forcing everyone on the rides, you know. that whatever it was, Mr. Moose. Oh, I can't even remember the name of the park, but John Candy was there too.
What a nightmare. Like I don't even care at this point. I don't care if anyone's at my funeral in 50 years. Like I just enough. So we've been talking about this game last night. The tough thing, Murph, about the playoffs with the ups and the downs, and you know, the last night was the Canucks' 14th playoff game that we've had over the last month. And that was really the first gut punch loss. Like Braden Schenn scored in overtime. But, I mean, it was a great game, and you were still winning the series, all of that. Last night was the first time that we've gotten to kind of reach back in the old, memory bank and pull out a really tough gut-punch type of loss.
Yeah, and that's saying something, too, because really, it's just a one-goal lead going to the third period against a very good Vegas team, right? So you're hoping they can hang on to even up the series. But, I mean, did you guys feel like the one goal lead was safe going to the third? I certainly didn't at that point. I knew Vegas, you know, we've seen how many extended shifts they've had in Vancouver's end. In fact, the end of the second period was nervy enough for Vancouver. So Well, I agree. It's a gut punch because you held a lead going to the third period. And for the first time in these playoffs, you blew a lead going into the third period. I don't think it was a loss in which you say, oh, my God, that was ours. We should have won it. And they scored late and they won in overtime. I mean, Vegas dominated in the third. You know, the Canucks looked tired. Markstrom looked tired. Myers looked tired. So once they got that first one, I mean, I don't know if, even at that point, if I was thinking the outcome was in doubt. I know that Vertanen had a chance, and I went right back the other way a short time later, and then that kind of seemed like the end. But going to that third period, I by no means thought that the game was over, that's for sure.
We know with Vegas being up one goal in the third, it's not, and that's why they needed to score. They had a number of chances to start the third period. The Pettersson tip-in, the Vertanen chance as well came a bit later. I mean, they had their opportunities early in the third. They didn't score, and Vegas is just so good and deep that they get opportunities. You make mistakes, they're going to finish. The thing I wonder, and Friedman kind of touched on this as well, and we went through it as well, right, Murph? When we talked to IMAC last night, maybe Hughes is going through something. We know JT Miller's not right. You've talked about that as well. Could Markstrom be going through something as well? I mean, this wasn't Friedman reporting this, just to be clear. He said he wonders if Markstrom's a bit banged up or if it's simply the dude's played a lot of hockey. He's played every second night and back-to-backs for the past month.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard of any potential injuries to Markstrom. I'm you know, you get this far in the playoffs, and we're, and it's funny, it's just second round, but I guess you can add a third round because of the play-ins. So certainly he might be dealing with something, and I tend to think it's more fatigue. Let's not forget, they only got the one day off after the Blues series to go right back into it. He's played back-to-backs twice in these playoffs. He's seen quite a bit of action in these games. So, you know, obviously he could be a little bit banged up. Let's not forget that he's coming off a knee procedure in February, and then he comes right back in, and you know, he had his camp, but he's played a lot of games, a lot of minutes, and at times some hard minutes. So perhaps he is, but you know, I haven't heard anything, and I would think the fatigue could be you know, just as reasonable to believe as an injury.
And the other thing that Elliot kind of mentioned was about Markstrom and overall the contract situation. And one thing you mentioned too was towards the end, right before the return to play, they tried to hammer something out. It didn't happen. Ultimately, Dan, I still think there is a deal to be made between Markstrom and the Canucks. But, you know, it's interesting. The Canucks, you know, to the other point Elliot made, if they have an understanding of what the market might be, it might kind of tell us why they might be playing a bit of hardball here, or at the very least not putting their best foot forward right away with that big contract that he's looking for.
Well, and I would agree. Now, first off, I mean, this is Newport, and this is Pat Morris. I mean, these guys aren't known to be giving many discounts, right? They're not going to be saying, oh, yeah, we just want to get something done. They're going to come out and play hardball, and so are the Canucks. And the unfortunate part for Markstrom is the flat cap, the pandemic. You know, he's getting his UFA status here at the worst possible time because he finally is a number one. And, you know, according to a lot of the micro stats and some of the other main stats, he's you know, maybe not elite, but he's top tier. So it's kind of tough timing for him. And I guess when it comes down to it, he's going to have to decide, because I'm sure there's going to be some offers out there, but I think teams are a little more wary of spending top dollar on goaltenders, like big, big money. And that's not to say he's not going to get $6-7 million. Maybe someone makes an offer of $7 million a year, but teams are more wary of that now. So for him, it's going to be, does he like the direction Vancouver is going? He's finally getting a taste of winning for the first time in his career. Does he believe in the direction of this club? And if so, maybe he's willing to take $500,000 less per year, you know, $600,000 less per year. I don't even know what the number's going to be. And that's something him and Pat Morris are going to have to figure out ultimately, because, I mean, the Canucks don't have unlimited dollars here. They've got other UFAs. They've got two RFAs. And, you know, we don't know what's happening with Michael Ferland. Like, is he planning to come back next year as well? So you know, there's overages now with bonuses. So, the tough spot for the Canucks, a tough situation for Markstrom in terms of hitting this contract time right now. But I think there's a deal to be worked out there if Markstrom does indeed want to stay with Vancouver, because, you know, this is still priority number one for Jim Benning.
Dan Murphy joins us from Sportsnet. So, not to, and I don't mean to set this up as like a, you know, fan gatekeeping. I know we hate that, but what should, in your opinion, should Canuck fans be feeling right now based on, you know, the last month and the direction of their team?
Well, I would say this. I don't think Canucks fans should be hanging their heads being down 3-1 to Vegas. I mean, I think that this team came back, has shown, I think they've shown some real heart in these playoffs, bouncing back after game one in Minnesota, midway through game five against St. Louis, looking like it was over and done with, winning that series, playing a strong game two in this series. So I think there should be a feeling of some, you know, this run is, it's not a long run, but it's created some happiness. It's created some good vibes. It's shown that their star young players are up for the challenge of the playoffs. But I think also, I mean, I think if you look at things critically, when you're taking on a Vegas team, you can then see, you know, how much more there is to get to that level. You know, the bottom six depth is not the same as Vegas. They don't have an Alex Tuch in their bottom six. They might not have a Chandler Stephenson in their bottom six at this point. You don't know, and they've got a lot of money tied up there. So I think that you can look at it two ways. You can be happy with what's happened. You can be maybe a little bit surprised and proud of the way they've responded. But also you can say, hey, there's still a ways to go. The defense needs more, clearly. And, you know, they need some more depth up front. That's for sure. So I think you can look at it through many different lenses, and some positive and some negative, some optimistically and some a little pessimistically. It doesn't have to be black and white, I don't think, in this case. I think there's a lot of different angles to look at it.
There's so many different ways, right? Because you're right. Multiple things are true at the same time. Nobody in their right mind would say getting to the second round of the playoffs for this team after missing the playoffs 4 years in a row is a disappointing season on a whole. It's just not.
No.
I mean, no team has won a Stanley Cup in the Cap era, missing the playoffs 4 years in a row and then going back winning the Cup. Only two teams made it to the conference finals. One was the Blackhawks, one was the Hurricanes. The Hawks the year after won the Cup. The Hurricanes this year, they lost in the first round of the playoffs. So there's no precedence for a team missing the playoffs this long and then all of a sudden having amazing success. The Canucks hit that standard. Now the challenge becomes what you outlined about what you do to make the team better next season. But realistically, and to me, the most important point here is expectations have now changed. Now when management approaches next year and also from ownership, it's like, yeah, now you got to be contending every year. Making the playoffs this year is great. It allows these guys to remain in charge and run this team for another season at least. But the expectations, you know what it's like, Murph, in this market. When the team is expected to be a playoff team, to have playoff success, there's a whole different level of expectation from the top of the organization.
Well, and there's no question. And here's the other, I mean, if I was posing a question to you guys, like, I mean, would you be surprised if they made it back to the second year or second round next year? No. Would you be surprised if they missed the playoffs next year? No. I mean, they were a question mark this season going into the pause, whether or not they were going to make it. They won the play-in round, they get there. So, I mean, I think this team has to be improved, especially if you want to get into the, you know, a team that's consistently seen as a playoff team before even seen as a contender, if you know what I mean. I mean, you don't have to look any further. Teams like Toronto and Carolina, for that matter, teams that have real good, solid young bases, but flaws as well that they need to address before they can really make any significant steps to be considered contenders or top-tier teams. And I think that that's the way you have to look at it once the season is finally done, on how are we going to first off try to improve the team so that we are seen as a legitimate playoff team before even a legitimate contender.
Murph, we appreciate the time. Maybe one more playoff game to go. Hopefully there's more, but you know, much like Elliot Friedman doing the interview, it's been a roller coaster ride.
Sorry, folks. Park's closed. Moose out front should have told you. That's what the line was. Now I remember it. John Candy. Well, God bless him.
Yeah, we miss John Candy. Yeah. Have a good one, Murph. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, boys.
Take care. Dan Murphy from...